So, like I said, a little bit familiar, a little bit strange. So what are the differences, question one, between the Beatitudes that we're used to hearing from Matthew's Gospel and these that we've just heard from Luke? Well, there's a couple. For one thing, there's the location in Matthew's Gospel. It's the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, right? Jesus goes up the mountain with his disciples, sits down, calls his disciples to them. That's what rabbis did when they were getting ready to teach. And then off he goes with the Beatitudes. Matthew's great theme is of Jesus as the new lawgiver, the new Moses. And so Jesus going up the mountain is meant to recall Moses up on the Mount Sinai. Here, Jesus goes down the mountain instead onto a level ground, a plain. And so if the Beatitudes, as we're used to hearing them from Matthew, begin the Sermon on the Mount, these that we hear today begin what's called the Sermon on the Plain. That's one difference. A second one is that Matthew's list of Beatitudes is better than twice as long as the one we hear from Luke. Luke has four Beatitudes, blessed are, and so on, whereas Matthew has nine. So there's a few that Matthew has that Luke doesn't. Blessed are the meek of heart, blessed are the lowly, blessed are the peacemakers, and so on. But the real difference is in the first two that lead off the Beatitudes, both in Matthew and in Luke. So Matthew's version, which we're very used to hearing, is, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Those who, in other words, may have a good deal of assets, you know, drip their diamonds and sip their Chardonnay and sweat their stock options, but inside, you know, they're like hollow and angsty, you know, past the point of any old executive coach or personal trainer or analyst or therapist or mixologist to fix, right? Not so with Luke, as you just heard. No poor in spirit for Luke, just poor. Poor, okay? Same thing with the second one in the sequence. In Matthew, it's blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. In other words, people whose bellies may very well be full, but you know, they kind of pine for a world, gosh almighty, you know, that might be a little bit better than this world in which we find ourselves now. Not with Luke. No, hungry for righteousness, it's hungry, period, hungry. Kind of pointed, isn't it? You know, Luke presents us with the hungry, the poor, and those who weep in a very direct kind of way. But it's even more powerful than that, because what Matthew says is, blessed are the poor in spirit, the poor in spirit. What's Luke say? Blessed are you who are hungry now. Blessed are you. What's the difference? Well, I think it works like this, that Jesus in Matthew's gospel could say, blessed are the poor in spirit without the poor in spirit being anywhere around him, right? You know, they're over there somewhere, who knows where. Same with the merciful or the lowly or the peacemakers or something like that. When Jesus looks at the crowd and says, blessed are you who are poor, or blessed are you who are hungry, or blessed are you who are weeping now, he is looking straight at people who are poor, who are hungry, and who are weeping now. He's one of them. He's one of them. He stands in their midst in a very powerful way. As if somehow, in staring straight at them, at the poor, at the hungry, at the mourning, that he's letting them in somehow. He's letting their poverty, their hunger, and so on, touch him. In such a way that he wants to touch them back and console them somehow. And so what does he do? He tells them something that never would have occurred to them. Never. That they, in their poverty, are what? Blessed. They, in their hunger, are blessed. They who are mourning, in their very mourning, are blessed. Holy. Of God. Sacred. It's often said that Jesus came to comfort the afflicted, right? and we can see this happening right in this gospel, looking straight at these people and saying, blessed are you, blessed are you. But if it said that Jesus came to comfort the afflicted, it's also said, as you may have heard, that Jesus came to what? Afflict the comfortable. Which brings us to the last significant difference between the Beatitudes as we hear them in Matthew and the Beatitudes as we hear them in Luke. Luke's Beatitudes end with a series of woes. Woe to the rich, woe to the full, woe to those who laugh, and so on. The language is paired exactly with his Beatitudes. Matthew has woes too, but those show up a couple chapters later in an entirely different discourse. But notice again the language. Woe to you. Woe to you. Woe to you. Again, Jesus is standing in the midst of the people that he is speaking to, and he sees them, the rich, the fat, the healthy, all of those folks who take pride in themselves and their accomplishments and look down on these poor people and so on. So what's interesting about this language, blessed are you who are poor, is that we know not only where Jesus is standing literally among them, looking at them, we know as well where Jesus is standing figuratively, where he is standing figuratively. He is standing with those people, especially who are poor and hungry and mourning. So that's the first question. What are the differences in these two versions? Which brings us to the second question, what difference do the differences make? As I said, Matthew has a particular purpose in casting the Beatitudes up the mountain where Jesus, the new Moses, is giving the new law. What's going on here in the comforting of the afflicted and the afflicting of the comfortable is one way that Luke is working out the central theme of his gospel, which is the great reversal. The great reversal. The first shall be last, and the greatest shall be least, and the last first, and the least greatest. Mary sings this great reversal early on in the gospel when she goes to visit her kinswoman Elizabeth. He has cast the mighty down from their thrones, and he has lifted up the lowly. So that's what difference the differences make, I think. That we see Luke in the way he constructs his Beatitudes, underlining, emphasizing the central element of his gospel. Which then leaves us with the third question. What difference do the differences make for you and for me? There's a couple ways to come at this. One is just to look again at the fact that the language of Jesus tells us where he's standing, who he's standing with, and whose side he's on. He's standing amidst the poor, looking straight at them, and declaring himself on their side. There is only one place for us to stand. We either stand with the poor, as Jesus did, or we don't. We either stand with the poor, beholding them, and letting their need touch us the way Jesus did, or we don't. We either stand with and among the poor and let their needs touch us, and then try to do what is in our power to comfort them in their affliction as Jesus did, or we don't. It's interesting when you stop and think about it, because the poor in spirit lets us off the hook in a way that blessed are you poor does not. Same with blessed are those who hunger after righteousness. Those people can be somewhere else, and we don't need to be too concerned about them. But when it's blessed are you who hungry, we're implicated. We're involved. we're being told that we have an obligation to stand where Jesus stood or not. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's one application, I think, for you and for me. But here's another. Here's another. Those of you who are like as old as me, and man, that's old, you will remember that one of the big changes in the Second Vatican Council was we flipped the altar around. It used to be up against the wall. Remember, we moved it out into the middle. Why did we do that? Well, it was to make the point that here at the liturgy, when we gather, it's not like Jesus is up there or somewhere far away. He's here in our midst, our brother among us, teaching us as once he did for his disciples. He's here in our midst. Which means that the same Jesus who stood in front of that crowd on the plain in Luke and said, "Blessed, blessed, blessed, and woe, woe, woe," stands here in our midst today, beholding us, looking at us, understanding us with a level of detail and insight we could never expect to understand ourselves by. And just as you will never ever meet a person for whom Christ did not die, and so there is no one in this room for whom Christ did not die, by definition, so you will never meet a person who is not in some way broken. And there is no one in this room who is not in some way broken. And Jesus looks at us in that very brokenness. He looks at us in all those places where we just don't have it together, those places where we keep doing things we wish we didn't do, or we don't do the things we wish we did. He looks at us in all the places where we don't have it together, where we don't know the answers, where we can't understand why this is coming at us, and so on and so on and so on. And he's looking at us in the particulars of all of our brokenness, and what's he saying? Blessed. Blessed. Sacred, holy, of God. That's a word we don't imagine hearing, is it? In the midst of those things that we would rather not have to admit. And he's also looking at us because there are those places where we try to pretend that we have it all together, where we try to show the world how in control we are, where we pretend that somehow that brokenness, it's about somebody else, friends, it ain't about us. Or he's looking at us in those places where we look down on those other people who are not like us because, you know, we're better than them, aren't we? Whoa, whoa. Here's the mystery. There is no one in this room who is not both of those things. Broken in some way, and yet somehow a little bit higher above themselves than they should be. And so the real lesson for us in this gospel, I think, is that you and I are called to stand exactly where Jesus stood, in the midst of his people, especially those who are closest to his heart, with the people with whom he himself stood, the poor, the lowly, the last, the least. And we are called to comfort them in their affliction with the same comfort with which you and I have been comforted. That's the question. And we can either do that or whoa, whoa.